So hello and welcome back to the Hygge Nurse Podcast, where we explore the cozy corners of health and wellness to bring you insights that hopefully will warm your heart and soothe your soul. I'm your host, Rachel Zimmer, and today we have a really special guest joining us. We're thrilled to welcome Christy Farewell. She is the visionary CEO and founder of Kairos Insights. Kairos Insights helps organizations and leaders develop and strengthen their teams. And she's been a friend of mine for a really long time. So I'm really grateful to get to talk to her about wellness as a leader, how wellness impacts the team, and then how you can translate some of those things into organizational wellness. So I wanted to just invite you to grab your favorite cozy blanket, maybe a tea or a coffee, settle in, and let's get started for another enriching episode of the Hygge Nurse. Hello, everybody. So today I want to introduce you to a dear friend of mine, Christy Farewell. She and I have known each other for several years now, and she is the founder and CEO of Kairos Insights, which is a consulting firm that provides services to leadership teams and help them to develop strategies and cultivate healthy cultures. I'll let you speak more to that, Christy. But can you first just tell me a little bit about yourself?
Sure. You know, I wear many hats like we all do. So recently, this is the way I introduced myself at a gathering. I am the legacy of my grandmother, Mary, and my mother, Beverly. I am God's daughter. I am Daryl's wife, and I am the mom of, or the mother of, Zoe and Sebastian. And I also am the CEO of Kairos Insights. So that's the very long way I introduce myself. But I do that intentionally because it's not lost on me that me in my role today is built on so many things from the past, good and bad. And why I do what I do, it really doesn't matter if it's in business or in any other aspect of life, have a lot to do with my faith and my family.
It's an extension of who you are, the inside core of you. We were just talking about this actually yesterday, like how your business becomes sort of this reflection of who the core of you is in a lot of ways.
Yes, very much so.
So tell me a little bit about your journey. What inspired you to become the CEO of such a fabulous business?
You're so kind. You know, it's a funny story is probably about 2 years into doing this line of work. So in the space of strategy, people development, culture development, I've been in this space over 20 years. Prior to that, though, I was in financial services, very traditional banking, lending. And about 2 years into it, I realized, I was like, first of all, I love this. And then second of all, I was like, I could do this myself. Like, I don't need to be inside of an organization doing it. And I had a gentleman who was a serial entrepreneur. I remember sitting in the foyer of our church back in Pittsburgh, and I told him, I said, Evan, I think I really want to go out on my own and do this. And in the most kind, diplomatic, but clear way, he said, Christy, you need a little bit more time and experience under your belt to do what you want to do. Well, at that time, I think I probably had 10 years of professional working experience. I had about 2 years in the space of what I actually wanted to do. So whatever the case is, what inspired me about it and what led me to do it later, because I heeded his advice. You know, he had several successful companies, is that I am one who I love the work. Like, I love the work of coaching and guiding people to set strategy. I love the work of tilling the ground, if you will, when there are healthy or unhealthy cultures, sort of to understand what preceded it and or what's in the way of it being healthy. And I love that it allows me to operate in my gifting. So my ability to discern what's going on and speak directly to it in a very comfortable way is not everyone's comfort, nor is it the clarity everyone has in the moment, because when it's not just me, whether if it's me or another team member, when we come into working with clients, we fortunately are in a trust, in a space where we're trusted to speak plainly about what we see, whether if that's one-on-one in coaching, or if we're working with a senior leadership team. They have brought us in because they trust not only our capability, but our intent to help them. And I love that about the work that we do.
That's a really valued place to be in too. So, you know, you speak to a lot of leadership teams, and I know you and I have had several conversations about what makes healthy leaders. And I would love to hear your perspective, especially from the perspective of, you know, well-being. So when you see leaders and you're speaking to them and you say, you know what, this person has really gotten a handle on how to put boundaries around their time, you know, how they're being very intentional about themselves and their team members. What are those components that you see in leaders that are really being mindful of that?
You know, I think that there are two legs to this. When I think about healthy leaders and you experiencing a healthy leader in an organization, I think there are two paths to explore. One is the practice of the leader themselves. I think the other is the practice of the organization. And it's a symbiotic relationship. So a lot of times the healthy or lack of healthy practices of an organization, they directly impact how the leader has to respond. And the leader's capability of being a healthy leader directly impacts their ability to respond and stay healthy. So if I break those down a little bit more, and I think about the organizational side of that, when we talk with leaders about healthy organizations, a lot of times that feels like an intangible thing. The way we begin to put feet to it is healthy organizations really sit between the behaviors of the leaders and the capability of those leaders to behave in a given way. Processes or policies that govern the work that they do, and then the systems that do or don't support those processes and policies, and then lastly, the structure. When those are assessed and put in position well, that creates a healthy organizational culture. And we all know when we're in one, but without framing it, we don't exactly know what's contributing to it. Then when I think about the side of being a healthy leader, you already named some of the pieces. I think part, any leader, like I have a faith that I operate from. Mm-hmm. I know you do as well. And most individuals, whether if it is their faith or their value set, there is a why they do what they do. There is a why they choose to behave the way that they do. And then there's also a capability and a skill that's developed around that. So when I think about that capability and that skill that is developed and the idea of being a healthy leader, part of it is just being grounded in your own value system, whatever that is. It's what do you operate against irrespective of where you are? The second piece is, and this is just, you know, can be skill that is developed. A lot of times people, you know, you go through promotion because you have functional expertise. You're not always promoted because of the behaviors you've demonstrated of how to bring people together or how to have constructive conversations or how to balance the work that's on you, both you and your teams, or how to strategically influence in a healthy way. You know, people put a bad word. They act like politics is a bad word. And I'm like, no, politics is not a bad word till you're nasty in politics. All of those things are all a part of leadership and strategic leadership, how you think. Like strategic leadership always includes how you think, act, and influence into an organization. So when I think about healthy leaders, one is, what's the value set and how clear are you on your value set that you're operating from? And then the second thing is, what leadership capabilities have you developed? A lot of leaders, unfortunately, that we work with, for instance, if we do a 360, sometimes it's the first time they've received feedback up against some level of expectation around their leadership. And for me, that's a candid conversation. It results in a candid conversation with their leaders, because I'm like, you know, you say that you may have an issue, but you've not given any clarity to what good looks like. I think the last thing I would say, and it builds on being a healthy leader. When you think about, if you have clarity on the values that you operate from, and then you have clarity on the capability that's necessary to be a good leader, how are you making the decisions in between? And for me, that's the nexus of where are your boundaries? And boundaries could be many things. It could be about the amount of work on your plate, the type of work you're taking on, how you're leading your team, how you're protecting your personal and family time, and your own time that you need to reboot, because you can't pour out from an empty cup. How are you actually taking care of yourself? People think that that's a luxury. And I'm like, no, it's a necessity for good leadership. Heck, if you're tired, malnutrition, stressed out, guess what? Your adrenal glands are shutting down. You're not thinking clearly. You don't have the energy necessary to keep up with things. So I feel like I'm going on a little bit too much. So I'm going to pause and let you ask.
These are great.
Your next question.
You brought to mind, I'm reading a book called How to Know a Person. It's a really great book. I can't remember his name. I'll put it in the show notes. I think it's David something. He's a reporter. And he's going through different types of people. He was making the case that Myers-Briggs wasn't the best personality trait scale to use. And he was bringing up different types of people and how they fall on scales, basically. So an extrovert, you tend to be on a scale, right? You're not all the way extroverted. You're not all the way introverted. You tend to be on a continuum. And one thing he had brought up was agreeableness. So that was another type of personality, and how, you know, you can have different scales within that. But he brought up, and you said this, when you have a highly agreeable person, they tend not to be promoted. And so going back to the promotion of someone for functional abilities, you know, and not necessarily for their ability to bring the room together or to bring teams together, you do happen to see that a lot. And so there's this perception, I think, sometimes that we have when we're looking at higher leaders, thinking, okay, they must have all the right pieces in place. And then you feel kind of shocked to realize, oh, wait a minute, you know, what I had in my head. I remember, for example, when I first became a nurse practitioner, I'm not going to say how many years ago because I'm going to age myself, but, and I walked into, clinical practice and I became really good friends with physicians. And I remember in my head, I held them at such a high standard. Like I had them at such a high standard and I still do, but I remember thinking, oh, they're fallible. They're not, they're human. They don't know it all. You know, I always used to think that they did until I went into clinical practice, and I'm fallible and I don't know it all. Right. And so, but someone, you know, who might report to me or be in a team with me might not see me that way. And I think in a lot of ways, we see leaders with a certain lens and then feel struck. Because when a leader doesn't have well-being or mental health, and then you are kind of in their space, you start to feel, you know, even feelings of shame, you know, as one of the team members. And so I think there's just a lot of importance to thinking about that on a global level.
I wholeheartedly agree. You know, you made me think of an instance. It's I was still in financial services, but I had shifted into this people development space. And I will never forget it. It was a Friday. And the person I worked for, they had no other commitments, I'll put it this way, than work and dogs. And they did have a spouse, but, you know, they too worked a lot of hours. And I remember them asking me to meet at 6 on a Friday. Now, this was early on in my career, and I didn't, and for, you know, at that time, right. I felt like they were an amazing leader. I really did. So it was, I was hard pressed to say no. So I sort of hedged in between, and I said, well, I could talk to you while I'm making dinner at home, you know, and this was at a time where, you know,
right.
being remote was not the
phone call. Yeah.
So, right, it was a phone call. Literally, I'm putting things in and out of my oven. And even though I was, you know, a bit off put by the ask, I at that early time in my career, I never thought about the horrible example that I was following in terms of work. I mean, two, we would have meetings. It's like, hey, why don't we all get together at so-and-so's house on a Saturday to have a thinking session? I'm like, and my husband, as gracious as he is, we've been together over 20 years now. And he said to me, yeah, baby, you used to work a lot. But it was such the norm for me. It was not abnormal at all to work the way the evenings, the weekends. It wasn't abnormal at all. When I think about, you know, the challenges that they were facing as a leader, and I too was facing of maintaining overall health, knowing when to say no,
right,
for the sake of your own health, I think is not a known all the time, particularly in American culture, because it's normalized. And it may not even be saying no, it may be asking certain questions to discern how you reprioritize up against what's being asked. Because not only do you take the stress on that you have this expanded amount of responsibilities, but you're taking the stress on of not performing at a given level. You're taking the stress on of disappointing your leader, your family, yourself, because no one's really getting all of what they want when this happens. That's just, you know, I thought about that story as you were saying, and I'm thinking about in hindsight, I worked way too much. I lost out on a lot of fun time early on because of the amount of work. And I think most leaders today, I think it's just as bad or worse today.
I have a picture in my head. And I don't even think my daughter knows that I saw this picture, but she drew a picture of me when she was small. And it was a picture of me on the computer and her wanting to play with me. Now, it wasn't a very, like, 7-year-old sort of drawing, but it never left me, because I can't recall what was so important that day to work on, but I still hold the feeling of her wanting to play with me and feeling like she couldn't, right? And so, in the end, going back to how our culture has really encouraged sort of this nonstop, always being connected mentality, especially even for leaders, which is why I wanted to talk about this today. In the end, and I've helped a lot of people die, I will tell you, it is the people that you love that's in the end. And so I think that that's really the core of it, right? So putting boundaries in place, it sounds like, I mean, there's whole books written about that. It's important, but it's important for a reason. It's important because, you know, you don't want to miss out on your life. You don't want to miss out on, you know, the people that you love. And so I think that's really what maybe we're trying to say in this space.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I know we're talking about some common challenges. I guess we kind of flowed right into that. Are there any other challenges that you can think of that leaders face today, and maybe strategies that you help them, you know, put into place?
I mean, we're not short on challenges. When I think about the connectivity, though, of the challenges, how we've guided them, and the connection to their overall well-being, connecting those three things together. it may seem oversimplified, But whether if we're talking about a whole organization strategy or the strategy for a team or somewhere in between and a strategy for a division, that level of clarity helps leaders make good decisions. However, when you have an organization that just, they have a lot, they're doing a lot of good and they have a lot of activity, but there's not connectivity between that activity, not clear connectivity and decision. You have a lot of people independently making decisions. I think that not only setting strategy, but operationalizing strategy is a challenge. It's a challenge because there's the work of just convening and aligning everyone. It's a challenge of actually keeping it alive and relative and it not being something that's felt vertically. And it is, there is an absolute skill to keeping things prioritized to whatever those overarching priorities are or initiatives are. And the leader's ability and or challenge to stay connected strategically while interpreting. I mean, even the most senior, you could talk about the C-suite, right? They still have the challenge of interpreting and leading that next level around strategic priorities. If you take the leader in the middle who may have individual direct reports or may have a manager below them, they're taking the strategy and they're interpreting it to these tactical pieces. And they're trying to keep the wheels on the bus moving with business as usual and new initiatives. I think that that is a huge challenge of any leader in an organization. And, you know, that some of the things that we help individuals with around that, one is just setting the strategy and priorities, and putting plans to it in a real way. And when we do that, then a lot of times we're either encouraging them or helping to facilitate regular check-ins with communication and updates. And when we're guiding leaders to do that, a lot of times people say, this is so refreshing, just the fact that we're talking about it and that we're agreeing on what we're going to do and we're staying connected on a regular basis. And we were even a part of the conversation to set the strategy, right? It takes like that first part of setting it. When a leader pulls their people in to do it, it takes the stress off the leader, right? Having to figure it all out, because some people come into a leadership role and they think, I need to set the direction. I'm like, no. You need to think about how do you draw your people in to set the direction together? And it could be their direct employees. It could be many people in their ecosystem. So that's one big piece. I think another piece is, and I've already spoken about this, but to expand on it, self-care. How someone prepares themselves every single day for the day is huge. You know, a lot of people will talk about morning routines. I personally think that that is necessary. Whatever that might be, I happen to be the person that it is a great day when I sit out on the deck. It could be as small as 15 minutes, to ground myself in the morning. And that grounding could be anything from me, praying to doing some type of reflection to meditating. And it's all with a cup of coffee and my dog, you know, but that's me. Some mornings I work out, not all mornings, but that self-care routine in the morning, and setting an intention for the day so that you're making decisions, because I mean, we have a million decisions we have to make, from as simple as, am I going to use sugar in my coffee today or no sugar today, to, oh, my whole schedule is just blown up and now what do I do? You know, we have this, there's a whole variety of decisions during the day. But I find that when people carve out that time in the morning to do what they need to do to fill their cup and take care of themselves, it's critical because it sets the tone for the day. The other self-care thing is that if you're in the middle of the day and that screaming lady or man is in the back of your head, so what do to calm them down? Do you go on a walk? Mm-hmm. Do you meditate? Do you pray? Do you go to that trusted partner where you can say, listen, mm-hmm. I just need to get this off my chest and I need some advisement. Like, what is that for you when I had a leader and she would joke, and it was such a great analogy. She would, when she was having a moment, she would call it losing your keys. And when you lose your keys, that means anyone could drive you anywhere because they got them. So at times she would say, listen, I'm here, but my keys are in Europe right now. I'll be back. That meant we knew she needed a moment just to get herself recentered and regrounded. And if we happen to talk to her between now and when she gets to that point, she might have a reaction that is outside of what we would expect. So, but, you know, challenges, really connecting the vision, the plan, and then what's being executed and doing it in an inclusive way with your team where they're staying connected. It's a challenge, and it's something we guide people around, of just how you stay connected and have that communication. Another challenge is just self-care, and what do you do when you physiologically know when you're losing it. And you feel like you're just about to pop. And if the wrong person asks you the right question, they might receive information they never thought they would hear.
In the moment. That's what I have found, right? To reflect on it, you can go back and say, maybe I shouldn't have said that. But the trick is to be mindful in the moment. Oh, I am dysregulated right now. Mm-hmm. Like, I have heaviness in my chest.
You know my word for dysregulated? Yes. I used to tell people I have some misplaced emotion right now. So what you're observing in this, in what I'm about to say, is not connected to the words that I'm saying. I'm like, that's the best I could do for you is to tell you that I'm hijacked right now. I've lost my keys. My keys are in Europe. I'm here, but they're in Europe. I'll let you know when they're back. AKA, don't do anything to tick me off. No, that's not right.
Oh, I feel it. You know, I was just thinking about, I did not have a morning routine before COVID. I started a morning routine during COVID because I was so dysregulated, because I was, I mentioned this before, but I was saving the world. I was feeding people who were hungry. I was doing all the things that are wonderful things, right? On the surface, you know, helping people get healthcare access, being, you know, a healthcare provider. And then I realized, wait a minute, I think Chad said this. He said, you cannot save the world. You know, and it, you know, it's true. And so I ended up, I had a really great therapist, number one, and she really helped me hone in on the fact that a morning routine is, number one, not a waste of time, and number two, essential. And number three, what you said, is going to set the tone for your day. And I'm not sure that I can go without a morning routine now. I am the same way. I do my 3 pages of writing and have a dog that sits beside of me. It's the quietest he ever is, and you've seen him. So that's his calm moment.
That's amazing that he's quiet.
He's calm. And I'm calm. Right. And so, there's a beauty. I know that people listening may not have a morning routine. And so that could be whatever centers you. And so hopefully maybe one takeaway from today is to think about what is that and giving yourself some space for that.
Absolutely. You know, one small thing, and there's a lot that I can't speak to on this, but I will bring it up because people could Google about it if they want, is truly grounding. Going outside and touching your feet to the earth. There are grounding mats that people use when they step out of the bed in the morning. My best friend got one that she puts in her bed, but I don't know about that right there. I was like, okay, you let me know how that works. But they're truly grounding. It's for people who are very nature oriented, they understand that connection. But if you're not naturally nature oriented and you're super stressed, your ability to go outside and literally just sit in the grass or walk in the grass,
it does.
It calms your body. I know, but I'm not gonna. I am not gonna play a scientist. I'm just speaking about my personal experience.
Yeah,
but you may be able to advise us.
And it's, I think that's just how we're made, right? We're made from the earth. So, so yeah, I won't get into the science.
You're right.
Now, mostly because I want to talk to you. So, if a leader's mental health is impacted, how do you see that playing out in their effectiveness or the health of their team?
You know, in a lot of the work we do, some of what we assess are stress behaviors. And I see it come out in their stress behaviors, and I'll give some examples. I see it come out in their physical, like physically you could see the stress on them. Some people that means that they gain weight. Some people lose weight. Some people you see it in their eyes. When I think about the stress behaviors, you know, some of it is they're just like, some people retreat and they are almost immobilized. I worked with a leader, it came to mind immediately, that they were so overwhelmed to receive a decision from them to move forward. They were immobilized by the stress, and they were in a senior leadership role. And I felt horribly for them. And I recognized where they were, as they also dealt with some anxiety. So this just like amplified the anxiety. I also see, you know, to the point of the physical impact, particularly when you have people who internalize their stress a lot, whether if it is just the tightness of muscles and the tension that builds up in your muscles, which leads to headaches, and it could lead to many other things, but a lot of people mostly will recognize the headaches that come on and or inflammation that comes on from the stress in their body. I think the most extreme example of the impact, on a leader's well-being that I've seen is where it actually affected their adrenal glands because of the level of stress. Now, I would not naturally know this in the work that I do, but I happen to know it because they were just having some regular blood work and, you know, testing with their clinician. But when I think about all of those things, you know, it's going to impact how you show up in a meeting, how you show up with your team. If you have low, say you're kicking off something new and your body is just depleted and your mind is overwhelmed with thoughts and decisions, there's no way you're giving the energy, vision, and or guidance effectively, just clearly communicating thoughts. It's lost in the middle. Or if people, they may ask a question and say you're really stressed and tensed up, you see people have these flippant responses that is so disproportionate to the question that was asked. And when I think about how that cascades to the point of a healthy leader in a healthy organization, one of the central things is a healthy organization is only the result of having healthy leaders. It's one of those four elements that I named earlier and their respective behaviors. If you have someone who's constantly stressed out, snippy, not giving clear direction, not recognizing and acknowledging their employees for the hard work that they're doing, losing perspective on the workload, the real workload of their employees, because it's easy for a leader to become distant from what it takes to actually do the work they're asking someone to do. Therefore, they have lost sight of how much they've asked someone to do because they're overwhelmed. It's just a domino effect. When that happens, you begin to lose, you know, consistency and performance of obviously that leader, but also their team. when I think about who are the people who maintain the policies and processes of an organization or the systems that are supposed to support them, when people break down, all of those other things break down too.
Yeah. It's a really good picture, really good reminder. Yeah. Do you have any books or podcasts that you're listening to or reading right now that you think could be helpful for people, especially aspiring leaders?
Oh, this is me needing to choose. So, two things. And while this is a clinical, it's a book set in a clinical setting. Make sure I have the title right. I believe the title is Patient Second, which is contrary to how most clinicians would think, but it's all about putting the people of your organization first and let everything flow from that. Because a lot of times, particularly in clinical settings, and I think there are a couple other fields that would speak to this, it's all about what's in front of you of what you have to do, irrespective of you or the people around. It's all about that patient. But in that book, it really focuses on how you put your people first and you let the patient care flow well from that. You know, a podcast that I'm listening to currently, and this is more for entrepreneurs. The title of it may or may not speak to organizational health at face value, but it's actually called the Move to Millions podcast. But that podcast for entrepreneurs in particular talk about what is needed basically in a healthy organization to grow as an organization. Whether if you're trying to grow to your first million or to many millions of dollars, it's just a podcast that, I mean, you talk about anything from leading your people to creating the right structures in your organization as an entrepreneur. I'm just trying to think about resources on both sides for people inside of organizations and people who are leading their own organizations. And then, look, let me, I literally am opening up my Audibles. I'm not, titles of things, whether if it's things or people, I'm not always, well, no, that wouldn't be great. That's another entrepreneurial one that I'm listening to here. Which one did I listen to last? This is so funny. People are like, stop meandering.
You gave me her book and I actually really enjoyed it. She's very practical in the strategies that she gives. So I haven't listened to the podcast, but that's a really great recommendation.
Yeah, she has someone different on there. All the time that just brings different perspectives. And for me, you know, I like that personally because it is the intersection of faith and business. So I appreciate that, that perspective. And, you know, whether your listeners are people of faith or not, there are still just practical, it's practical business knowledge that's in there. But those are two things that come to mind rather immediately.
All right, and the most important question of all, it's if you could pick a macaroni shape, which one would you pick and why?
I think I like the shells. And I like the shells. So we are fans, if we're talking about boxed macaroni, Annie's brand, right? So whether if it's that or if we're making it homemade, I like it because there's always like a little dollop of cheese inside the shell when you make it right. So it's like the little kid in me. I'm like, I eat it and it's like, whoa, there's gooey cheese on the inside. And then when I make it with those, it's just like a nice surprise every time you bite into it.
So you're saying that you're like the shell with the gooey surprise on the inside.
Wait, was that a part of the question? I mean, you could say that. You could say that, yes. But I was like, wait a minute, was that? Listen, that is too funny.
I like it. I like it. I'm going to go with it. Yes.
If you press into me, some good's going to come out. Macaroni. Yes, I do. I love shells. I do.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
What's your favorite?
What is my favorite now versus before? So I can't even name these. Like they're not spiral. Okay. They're like spork macaronis. And it's because Daniel loves macaroni and he likes the kinds that you can put your fork in. And so you don't have to chase it around. And now I would compare it to me just because it's complicated. It's like, I can't explain it. Mm-hmm. I know what it looks like, but I can't explain it. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it stays relatively stable in it, but it soaks up a lot of good sauce. So that's mine.
that is a winner.
No one split the question on me. Absolutely. But that would be mine. And I don't even know what it's called.
Well, I'm saying that, you know, I Googled spork really macaroni. Like, I'm like,
I think
what
I have to put a picture
macaroni?
Of it. It's like a really short macaroni and it's got like little spirals in it, but it's not spirals. It's almost like, mm-hmm. yeah.
It's
yeah.
Like it's on the like, edge. It's on the edge. This yeah. one picture. Yeah. It's, yeah, it's called yeah, the one I'm looking like at is called Sporkful. Yeah.
There we go. Yeah. I know. Okay,
so I've never seen this macaroni in my life. I've never seen it. I mean, it sort of looks like a mini lasagna, like a really tiny lasagna noodle, but I have never seen these. See, you are my friend. You always
so
know
weird.
Things
it's
like
so
this.
Weird.
Always.
Just oh. random stuff. All right, Chrissy, this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
It has. Thank you so much.
You all enjoyed that really enlightening conversation that I got to have today with Chrissy. She has been such a friend of me, and she's so brilliant in her leadership strategy skills. Chrissy, thank you so much for joining us and sharing such valuable insights. It's clear that your work is not just about guiding businesses, but also empowering leaders to forge paths that are both innovative, thoughtful, and caring. So for our listeners, if you're inspired to learn more about Kairos Insights and how their approach can revolutionize your own leadership and strategies, please be sure to visit their website. I've included the details in our show notes, along with links to her recommended resources. And remember that leadership is not just about the decisions you make, but also about the moments that you create for growth and connection. So hopefully we'll take the insights that we learned together today and lead with intention and Hugo, right? So embracing comfort, mindfulness, and well-being of ourselves and of those around us. So thank you so much for tuning in to the Hugo Nurse. If you enjoyed our conversation, please share it with a friend or leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. And we really love hearing from you and appreciate your support. So until next time, keep nurturing your mind, body, and spirit, and stay cozy and connected. Goodbye for now.